Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your host from SteelersDepot.com, where you can find all your latest and greatest Steelers news. It's Dave Bryan and Alex Cazora, always lit, talking Steelers. And now, here's Dave and Alex.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast, Season 14, Episode 123. He's Dave Bryan. I'm Alex Cazora, SteelersDepot.com. Thanks for being back with us here this Saturday, Steelers Nation, as it is the sleep fast night of the NFL draft as day two wraps up, rounds two and three, getting ready for the final day of the 2024 NFL draft, rounds four through seven, and of course, the undrafted free agent frenzy. Day three, new Steelers, two Wilsons and a Frazier. That's a name of a sitcom from like the 1990s, right? Two Wilsons and a Frazier. And we got to all bow down at the altar of the Dave Mock draft. The rounds may not have been 100% accurate, but you are crushing it right now, my friend.
The rounds are off. But look, anytime that my whole goal when I do those things and we list out, you know, the extra player, you know, others considered and all like that, is to kind of model it like the contest that we do where everybody gets 50 shots at naming 50 different players that they think will be drafted by the Steelers. And then obviously we ask people in that contest to list the rounds that they think, because that's part of the scoring process there. But I mean, look, anytime that you get, I've done this long enough now that anytime that I hit even just one player in a mock draft, regardless of a round, I'm happy with it. But anytime you hit two or more, it's really the blind squirrel finding the nut there. But, you know, look, the two that I hit, obviously, Zach Frazier and Roman Wilson both had in the wrong round there. I mean, it's not super hard to draw connections to the Steelers, and the only hard part is making yourself pull the trigger in a certain round,
right?
You know,
right.
When it comes to the final time that you do your mock or the seven rewrites that follow after it, as I know you probably can relate to there, but. Yeah, once again, I think my goal when I write these things up is to write the player I think will be drafted in a round and another, what, four or five people, players that considered there. And then in that total list of, say, 35 or 40 players that you build out there, you hope to have a lot of the Steelers selections in there. I think that's the ultimate kind of goal in this thing overall. But yeah, I'll take it. I'm not ashamed of it here, and I don't think the Steelers will be ashamed of the three other players that they added on Friday.
For sure, your one man one mock strategy is working out well. But the picks on Friday at number 51, center Zach Frazier from West Virginia, at number 84, Roman Wilson, the wide receiver from Michigan, and then at number 98, Peyton Wilson, the inside linebacker from NC State. So three names we've talked about throughout this process, two of them coming in for visits in Peyton Wilson and in Zach Frazier. Frazier was a local guy, but still Pittsburgh knew him well, a pretty short trip from Morgantown to Pittsburgh for his NFL career. So Dave, let's kind of fly through things, talk about these names, and give you a preview for day number three. Zach Frazier at 51. Again, board breaking perfectly for Pittsburgh. They can stay at 51, did not have to trade up, and they get one of those top three centers. Graham Barton going in the first round, Jackson Parrish Johnson going in the 40s to the Raiders, probably to play guard, but Frazier falling to 51. I mean, that was the hope. I mean, the hope was get a tackle in the first round and get a center in the second round. I thought you'd have to trade up for, you know, to get that center, one of those big three. Instead, you stay at 51. That works out perfectly.
Man, first of all, you sound a lot more well-rested than I am.
Oh, I am not. I promise you. This is all 2 minutes after we're done with the podcast. My face will be on the desk right now.
Man, I tell you what, they must have nerves of steel in that draft room there.
Seriously.
The way there was some moving around, you know, ahead of them in the draft, and I think a team or two. I think we had even, I can't remember specifically, had maybe identified as teams needing potential centers. And it was a long time since. When did the Raiders pick come in for Jackson Powers Johnson? What number overall was that?
40 something. I'll check here. It was about probably 10 picks, okay. 12 picks before Pittsburgh came in. Let's look it up here quickly. 44. So 7 picks ahead.
Okay. Not as long as a wait as I remember. It sure felt like it. I bet it felt like till I get in the Bill Nunn draft room as well there. But look, for you to wait like you did, for a player, a lot of people, I think would say that, they got a player that was top 35 or 40 on in overall rankings, and depending on who you asked or what position you think certain players would play, some people would probably tell you they got either, the second or the third best guard, center in this draft as well, too. I'm not as well rested as you are.
Hey, he played some guard in his career.
Yeah, he did play a little bit of guard.
Say that.
But, I mean, the value, I think, is great. Is one of the things that we thought pre-draft, well, if they bypass center in the first round and go tackle in the first round or whatever other position there, it gets real messy because they'll probably have to trade up in the second round to get him. And then where do you go from there? What does that do to the rest of your draft? What do you have to give up? And does it short you picks and yada, yada, yada. So, yeah, I think it was the best of all worlds there, especially the gift that you perceived to have gotten in the first round there with Troy Fa'utanu. There we go. Get that one out of the way already there. Well, I sure am glad they didn't draft Ruka Ro.
See, you can say it. Everyone can say it. It's a fun name to say.
There were a few other players that came off the board that didn't hurt my feelings, that would entertain listeners for several at least a year there. But all right. Zach Frazier, I think that's a lot of great value there. So after your first two picks, you get two players that I think many probably could have made arguments could have came off the board a lot earlier than they did.
If there was one guy that kind of felt like this year's Keanu Benton in the sense of this guy feels like a Steeler, it's Zach Frazier, somebody we've talked about for quite some time. The toughness, the experience, just kind of that old school rugged blocker that just gets the job done. I mean, I'm not going to call this some sort of like, this is the next great all-pro type center. I don't think Frazier's ceiling is that high, but I think he's going to be that type that starts for 10 years and is really just solid, consistently and dependable. In the middle, my NFL comp to him was Ben Jones, who Arthur Smith had in Tennessee right. in reference in his post-pick press conference. And I think they're getting the next Ben Jones.
Man, you hit that early in the process too, didn't you? When did you first utter or write the words Ben Jones?
Was it before Smith? It was in my scouting report, whenever that was. It was early. I don't know if even Smith was to hire at that point. I think it must have been because I think I referenced Arthur Smith had called Ben Jones his favorite player. But I mean, yeah, I'm good with the early prospect. Benton last year, Frazier this year. I'm good in like January to identify that guy and then don't count on me the rest of the way.
Well, I mean, no, I mean, we usually come out to shoot, right, with guys that we have circled, around the Senior Bowl time. I mean, that's kind of the first thing of this process. Obviously, you try to, because look, we can't sit here and watch three games on 300 players. Maybe someday after I retire from Steelers Depot, I might try to watch 300 players, three games or whatnot. But truth of the matter is, you have to kind of pick and choose and what positions of need does the team have? What players do you think would fit that? And then start working off the tape from there. And that's just part of the process to save yourself a little bit of time early on there. But I think we do a pretty good job overall out of the gate of identify certain players that the Steelers might be attracted to. And then, I mean, for you to right out of the chute say, I mean, this guy is like, a modern day Ben Jones. And then what did What did Arthur Smith say last night? Ben Jones, you know, gave a Ben Jones comparison there, and obviously Ben Jones was one of his, you know, was his center there with the Tennessee Titans there. So, man, if this guy's Ben Jones or better, you know, I think you really have done good there. Mm-hmm. When I look at him, and this is what I wrote in my profile as well too, and this has kind of been my belief with the Steelers and the center position since, you know, we got to a point where there were these defined top three centers in this draft class. If you need a center, if you want a center, if you want a day one center, you know, for the Steelers, how about just draft a damn center?
Right.
You know, and no, you know, none of these prospects this year, you know, come close to logging the amount of time at center that Zach Frazier did it at West Virginia. You know, what 2,667 snaps, I think, there to be exact. What you see on tape is what you're going to get. You know, there, we talked a lot about Graham Barton and the projection involved with him. And yeah, Graham Barton very well might end up being a better center in, you know, than Zach Frazier is in the NFL, but you don't have much to work with. You have measurables and obviously things you think he can do, and obviously the five or six games that he played at center back in 2020. But there's a lot of projection in there. And then when you got a guy like Jackson Powers Johnson, I mean, yeah, he had one full, not even really one full year. I guess one full year. I mean, last year, 800 and something snaps in total at Oregon there at center. But before that, he played guard and all. And even who was the Raiders drafted him. They even drafted him and called him a guard, you know, and I think that rolls along with that 322 pounds that he's listed at there. But the thing with Zach Frazier, I feel after watching several games, some 2022 games and some 2023 games, is, I mean, that he is who he is. And I think there's a level of comfort in knowing what you're going to get out of the guy. I think Arthur Smith said, you know, with him specifically and Troy as well too, you don't see lulls in their game. The thing with Zach Frazier too, it feels like when you put him out there, even day one, he's going to be comfortable with all the line calls, with the front identifications, everything that goes along with that, because he's so used to doing that stuff over the course of his career at West Virginia. You know, he's going to see and recognize stuff. So I think he's going to come out of shoot, be a day one starter for this team. You widen him up and you just point him in the right direction.
Yeah, and that's what this team needs. They need a day one starter at center. They did not have somebody. I had no appetite, desire to watch Nate Herbig play a bunch of center this season. He'll probably still be the backup, and if somebody, Frazier, gets hurt, then he'll have to go in, so be it. But, you know, you have a defined starter, a guy ready to play, which is a stark contrast from the last center they tried with Kendrick Green, who was not a refined and, you know, day one type of starter. They shoehorned him in and had predictably terrible results. Yeah, I still remember the comment that Ross McCorkle made in the roundtable that you could combine Graham Barton's and Jackson Powers Johnson's snaps at center, multiply by two, and it's still not as many snaps as Zach Frazier played at center at West Virginia. And so that just speaks to the experience level. And so, yeah, it's very consistent tape. You look at Frazier, his balance, he's never on the ground. It's that wrestling background that he had, a four-time state champion in high school, going 159-2 in his wrestling career, one of which he lost only because of an illegal move in a match he was up 8-0. That translates to the football field, the technique, the leverage, the pad level that he has. Again, not a super athlete, not somebody that's going to be, you know, making maybe some of the super splashy wow plays, but just technical, get the job done, just block him up. That's what Pittsburgh needs. That's what Pittsburgh's getting.
Look, he can get out in space if you need him to in the outside zone and stuff like that and all. But I mean, he obviously isn't the Marquise Pouncey build. I mean, remember how sleek and athletic Maurkice Pouncey was when he came out. And I mean, he's not obviously that level of athleticism. He's more roly-poly athleticism, you know?
Yeah. I just to make clear, I don't think, you know, schematically he'll limit you in any sort of significant way. He just won't have the super, super wow plays that maybe a Graham Barton or Pouncey, you know, would be capable of.
Right. And he's also not one of those guys too that, you know, his athleticism is better than a Chris Kimuatu, you know, to a degree. You remember Chris Kimuatu, he could get on the hoof, but if you just barely sidestep him, he's going to go right past you.
He was a straight line guy. That was
right. Right. I think Zach Frazier's got more, you know, COD change of direction and all to his game other, you know, than that. Look, you can pull him. He can reach. He can get across the three tech and cross face that way. He can get to the end of the line of scrimmage quickly and log block, turn him back in. Those kind of things. He could definitely get out, get the snap off, get to the second level, that kind of stuff there. So you can put him on the move if you needed to. And even, you know, you see in his tape, him pulling out from the center position there. Big hands, man hands. I mean, almost 11-inch hands on this kid. So when he gets his hands on, in fact, it's almost maybe no such thing as too big of hands, I don't think, on a center, but and the wrestling, the big hands and the wrestling background combined, I think, leads to him, once he clamps onto mm-hmm. guys, you don't see a lot of refitting going on. I think he just says, I got you now, sucker, you know, and I'm going to leverage you and wrestle move you out from there. There are just a few, you know, some instances in his tape where you said, man, if he just refit the defender real quick, you know, he would have hung on to that block or whatever there's, but the grip strength is amazing. Yeah. That's one thing that you'll see with him. Obviously the wrestling background, I mean, he tosses guys, you know, when he gets a hands on some of them there. He's a very, he has the vision to pick things up, twists and stunts and all like that. I think he's a very smart guy of knowing what's coming and kind of what to expect, those kind of things there. So, I was rooting for him to be the center of mm-hmm. all three of them. I think it would have been fun to watch Graham Barton from a learning aspect of, okay, well, a tackle to a center and watch the transition being made, especially what we knew about Graham Barton and his play at tackle and the way he used his hands more outside the frame of players. It would have been interesting to watch that. But at least with Zach Frazier, you know the kind of punches that you're going to get. You know he's going to try to fit right up underneath the armpits or right in the breastplate of defender there. So there weren't a lot of variances I didn't see from 2022 to 2023 tape.
Yeah, he's torquey because of that wrestling background. There's violence in his hands. He's got a really strong punch that can stun and jolt defenders, especially in pass pro. He can back block on, you know, gap schemes. He can, I think, you know, reach and cut off on zone schemes. Again, it's never going to be this super fluid, you know, out in space type of stuff. But again, I don't think there's any sort of big schematic limitations where you can't run a concept because of his athleticism. It's serviceable. It's acceptable. It'll get the job done. And he makes up for everything with the really good techniques that he displays. Also, just a very minor note here, a left-handed snapper. You don't see that too often. And last time Pittsburgh had a chance to draft a left-handed snapper was Creed Humphrey in 2021, which they passed on twice for Najee Harris and Pat Freiermuth. And so they get the left-handed snapper there in Zach Frazier. But yeah, just super solid guy. Because again, I mean, if you didn't get the top three centers, you know, there are centers in this class, there's some talent, but man, you really would have felt shaky on, okay, can this guy play right away if you draft even Norzad or Van Brand Granger, whoever of the others that there are, Van Brand Granger's not even been drafted yet. Neither is Norzad. So, you know, you really, at the NFL, was there another center drafted after Frazier in rounds two and three?
Was the
Bortolini's out there? Van Granger's out there.
Bortolini wasn't drafted. I can't remember. Right. I mean, so much happened. I'm able to watch every draft up until the Steelers pick right. it around.
Yeah, it's chaos.
And then it's just chaos. And then I have to go back later in the night or the next day and look at, oh, they that team drafted that guy. You know.
Yeah, but I don't think there was a center taken. Okay. I'm going through my – and so that speaks to the NFL collectively saying, like, those are the top three centers, and there was a pretty big drop-off from Barton – Powers Johnson, who's not going to play guard, and Frazier to the rest of the group. And if Pittsburgh had to go to the rest of the group, that would have spelled trouble.
Yeah, I sort of ignored my own rule this year. What do we say at the start of almost every pre-draft season? Centers
fall.
Centers get pushed down. Centers fall. Then you get all wrapped up, especially when the team has a need, and you start. Spending hours research for a post of who else needs centers across the NFL and your mind starts working against you. And, you know, you watch tape on all three of them and you think, oh man, you know, pretty good. Maybe I'm underrating where he's going to go. And then you get to the draft and you have one center go in the first round and the next two don't go, are completely off the board until pick 51 overall. So I'm get that tattooed on me. Centers fall. Maybe I'll remember it next year. You got one of the top three, and that I think mm-hmm. most of us agreed that should be the goal with this team within the first two rounds of the draft is to get one of the top three centers, and they did that. And once again, I mean, you get salt of the earth guy. I mean, I don't imagine the character. Look on him was very hard at all, especially with Blaine Stewart there at West Virginia.
Right.
I mean, he's been at West Virginia so long, and of course the proximity, you know, to Pittsburgh. I bet it was easy to kind of have scouts run over there and watch games and whatnot. And I think everybody should be very happy with the pick. I mean, obviously, should help improve that center position immensely day one.
Yeah, there's no questions on Zach Frazier, the person at all. I mean, he's West Virginia born, you know, stayed local. He's married. He enjoys, what did Arthur Smith say, woodworking. Like, that's what he does in his spare time when he's not playing football, is he's, you know, just kind of probably in his garage somewhere or something like that, making something. So no questions about Zach Frazier. I think the person, and you're pretty confident in who he is as the player.
Absolutely.
All right, at number 84, after that, you know, relatively long wait into the third round with the first of the Steelers' two third round selections, they took Roman Wilson, the receiver from Michigan. I'm kicking myself here because I said on the podcast I was convinced I was going to go Roman Wilson, although for the second round in my final mock draft, I went Pearsall last second. But to me, that's really good value, a strong route runner, productive. And somebody I think Mike Tomlin's been high on for quite some time.
Excuse me. Yeah. Oh, had a swallow wrong there. This was an easy dot connector, in my opinion, especially when you look back at kind of the interaction the two had at the Senior Bowl, pitting him up against Quinyon Mitchell from Toledo. To hear Roman Wilson speak around that time. I think he said, I met Mike Tomlin a few times at the combine. I think met Mike Tomlin a few times, even before I played college football. He's just a great guy. Definitely cares about football. You don't see many head coaches show up at the Senior Bowl. He's one of the guys and he's interacting with the players. Just a great dude there. There's that moment in the Senior Bowl practice footage where Roman Wilson comes up and kind of shakes daps Mike Tomlin up like the two known each other for 5 years over there. And then obviously Mike Tomlin at the pro day, Roman Wilson was not brought in for a pre-draft visit, I don't believe, but that's probably because they did not have any questions. I think about him, a Michigan product, 107. He broke the, you know, we talked about that 100 catch kind of barrier for wide receivers in the Steelers. a couple years ago, thinking that, you know, to get away from kind of the 1.5 year or 1 year wonders or whatnot, that the Steelers generally like around 100 or more receptions out of the wide receivers that they draft. Well, Roman Wilson caught, what, 107 passes for 1,700 yards, 20 touchdowns. So one every almost five catches was a touchdown during his college career. 45 of those catches that he had, which was a little less than half, his catches resulted in gains of 15 yards or more. 22 of his catches went for 25 yards or longer. He played a lot, you know, quite a bit in a slot, but as I think we mentioned in another show talking about Roman Wilson, you know, he did play a little outside. And let's see, 71.7% of his catches last year happened between the numbers. His average depth of target in 2023 was a very impressive 13.1 yards, and his average depth of completion was an equally impressive 11.8 yards. That means that the average depth of every catch that he made was 11.8 yards past the line of scrimmage. So there's that to him. I think he's a nice contested catcher, in my opinion. I think the biggest thing that he needs to work on is refining his route running, and then on any instance where he's not allowed a free release against press or man or anything, a motioning release or anything like that. I think that's one of the things that he'll have to work on is those kind of non-free releases.
Yeah, to me, that's the biggest concern, just the overall, I think, below average frame. He's 5'10", I think, in change, 185 pounds, not particularly strong. We'll have to work probably on release packages. I thought Michigan helped, you know, smartly so, but helped free him up with a lot of motions and working out of the slot. Not seeing a lot of press coverage in that regard at the college level. And yeah, the question to me is, you know, can he be an outside guy? And if not, you know, who is going to be their outside guy in, say, 12 personnel opposite George Pickens? Still not sure. Still think there could be some work to be done at receiver. But to the player, good player on tape. I think his route running overall is really strong, creating separation at the top of his route, rocker step on some of these over and crossing patterns that gets him open. Good body control, really solid hands. Dude just catches everything around his frame. You know, have the biggest catch radius, but throw it in his general vicinity. He'll adjust and make the play. A willing blocker with effort. Again, the size is not overwhelming, but there's effort. Take the effort of the small guy over the lack of effort from a big guy. You're just in a vacuum. You want guys that'll play hard. And again, going back to, I think, what Ross had said, you know, Michigan, the mentality was no block, no rock. And so, you know, Wilson understands the standard playing in a run heavy offense in Michigan and was super productive. 12 touchdowns last year on not a ton of opportunity compared to other receivers in college football. So it's a good player. I'm happy with the value for sure. Thought he would be a potential guy at 51, get him at 84. Fantastic. I just wonder, you know, is he going to be an outside guy? And if not, what else is there to be done at that position?
Yeah, it's a good point. You would like to have something else to kind of go along with him, especially as he develops. Greg Cosell, I think, is one of several that has some very detailed stuff on scouting reports on Roman Wilson, and he kind of compared him to one guy that you and I, you know, and a lot of people obviously like over the years, and that's Tyler Lockett. You know, out of the Seahawks. And I think you can kind of see some of that in his game for sure when it comes to him. As far as the blocking goes with him, you'll see that one clip around the goal line obviously float around and him get real physical and all like that. That's the high side. That's the extreme side of it with him. I'm not going to sit here and say that there's a lot of that scattered throughout the tape that I watch with him, but he is a willing and able blocker, and especially for a guy of his size. So that clip that you'll see floating around of him, put the guy on the ground and all like that. He can do that, but I just want to make it clear that it. every block of his hitting anywhere close to that.
Sure. But you know, as you alluded to, he's going to give effort every single snap. It's not going to be the controversy of, oh, he gave up on this play or anything that we had to deal with last year.
Right, right. Oh, yeah, most definitely. He's an effort guy. Like you said, no block, no rock.
And I like the Lockett comparison. He doesn't have the return value that Lockett had at a K-State, but as a receiver, yeah, I definitely see that. So again, overall, I'm happy. I don't know what outside receiver there could have been that would have made sense. I'm not really knocking the team too much here. I just recognize that I just want to see how the pieces fit, and I wonder if they're done at receiver. You know, I think the Niners type of stuff, trading for one of those guys, is probably out the window at this point. If it was going to happen, it would have happened on Thursday night. Obviously, did not. And the Niners seem pretty content to just roll with what they have, barring something unforeseen. But I wonder if they could explore, do you try to go back to a Cortland Sutton? If you could hypothetically flip him for that pick of 119, I think I'd do that all day long. You'd give up a future capital, you know, potentially there as well. But we'll see if they double dip. We'll see if they add something. But from the player, and I always like to talk about the player they drafted as opposed to the circumstances surrounding them in the moment, and we're going through draft weekend, they got a good player.
Yeah, they did. Here's something coming in from Jerry Dulac saying, Mike Tomlin and Omar Khan met with former Steelers cornerback Cam Sutton last week in Pittsburgh.
Okay. Is there anything else to that, or is that the Dulac?
That's the tweet.
Okay. I mean, I know Sutton's still going through the legal stuff. It did, I think, get knocked down to a misdemeanor. I don't think he's facing felony charges any longer. And there is that void there in the slot. We talked about, okay, you know, could Patrick Peterson come back, given this team's not addressed the slot corner position? So we shall see overall. I guess I don't know if they're just touching base. I don't know if they're going to explore something right now. Again, the legal stuff still has to be sorted out, but it's a little less murky because he's not facing the felony charges that he was initially facing.
Yeah, that's some interesting news to have on this early Saturday morning, day three of the draft, when the team still could use a nickel option here. Back to what you said about for a moment there, I saw Sutton in that tweet, and I thought,
oh, he's at Cortland.
I was thinking something to do with Cortland there. Here's the thing to keep in mind, too. Look, it wouldn't hurt my feelings for this team to double dip at a wide receiver position. I even did that in my mock draft. I think I had Luke McCaffrey as the second wide receiver draft there. It would not surprise me if this team did. If you're going to do it and make an impact with it, it would probably be in the fourth round, right? I mean, even though there's some interesting guys, there's the other Michigan wide receiver that I talked about, who was Cornelius
Johnson.
Yeah, that maybe you could get in the sixth round. It's a bigger bodied guy, smaller hands and all like that. But, I mean, as far as kind of initial impact guys, if you're probably going to try to get one of those, you probably have to do that in the fourth round. But here's something else to kind of remember. Right after the draft, you know, teams either A, might be willing to part with a guy via a trade, or some might outright release a guy or two. So maybe you look at something, you know, like that. And is it Tyler Boyd still out there at this point? You know,
But is he just more slot options? Is it just?
At least he gives you, a guy with experience, though.
Sure. Sure. I get that. I'm just looking for more of that defined outside type receiver. I mean, maybe you could try to piecemeal Wilson and Boyd together, but
right.
Yeah, I think ideally, you know, if you could get a Cortland Sutton, if they're going to do something at receiver in terms of potential year one impact, it'd have to be in the fourth round. I think Javon Baker from Central Florida is a fun player. He can make some really spectacular catches and averaged almost 22 yards per catch last year, despite not having amazing quarterback play with John Rhys Plumlee there. So we'll see. Just a thought. You know, again, there's other positions they certainly will have to address today, I think. But just my desire, I want to put out there to add a bit more at wide receiver.
Yeah, because it's a lot to put on a plate of a rookie draft pick, too, to come in and play, 700, 800 snaps. Or especially, contribute right out of the shoot. Now, Roman Wilson comes off as a very smart kid, and you know, I don't think you have any problem. But there's just nuances of the game and offense and all that he's going to have to pick up along the way. You know, what I'm trying to say is hard to, you know, can he come? Can you trust that he's going to come right out of shoot and be, you know, hit the ground running and an instant stat producer? You know, would you like to have to kind of bring him along? Look, he's going to be on the 53-man roster, obviously. He's going to be on the game day roster and those kind of things. But it would be nice to have another wide receiver to kind of move around with him. And yeah, I know you got Van Jefferson and Quez Watkins and all like that, but I would like an upgrade. Oh, yeah. Can I trade those two in and get upgrade a model or something?
Yeah, the defense rests when you say those two names in terms of needing an upgrade there overall. Although, you know, I'll probably talk about this more throughout the offseason, but we know under Arthur Smith, how many receivers typically put up numbers in an Arthur Smith offense on a given season? One.
Right. Yeah,
it's AJ Brown in Tennessee. It's Drake London in Atlanta, and the other guys kind of just put together 30 catches between three of them and a couple touchdowns. So could that mirror what happens in Pittsburgh this year, where Pickens is your obvious number one, the passing game runs through him on the outside, and you have a bunch of tight ends and backs and, you know, Wilson a little bit and some other receivers to chip in, potentially. I mean, that's kind of been the model of the Smith offense. Is it ideally what I want? No, but you know, that's how it's gone. So we'll see what happens.
Right. Yep. But look, I mean, I think they'll add to that room.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so as well. What is Duck tweeting about Ben right now? Is he meeting Ben? I know Ben met Pouncey yesterday. So
yeah, it looks like Ben might be on a world tour or something. Yeah.
Looks like it. Yeah, retirement's treating him pretty well. All right. So that's the book on Roman Wilson. And then we go to pick 98 for the other Wilson. They're drafted. It's all Wilsons right now. Everything's coming up Wilson. Peyton Wilson from NC State at 98. Falling due to medical concerns. But I think, Dave, and I think many people had this opinion, you know, pre-draft, that from a pure tape standpoint in 2023, the best inside linebacker in this year's class was Peyton Wilson.
If you didn't tell anybody any backstory with Peyton Wilson whatsoever, and you flipped on any game from 2023, I haven't watched every game, but I watched a lot of TV tape on him and then three all 22 games on him. But any game with him from 2023, I think you'd come away saying, man, is this, and if I told you ahead of time that this isn't the best off the ball linebacker class, you know, overall this year, if I gave you that kind of cheat in it, you'd probably say, well, then Peyton Wilson's probably the top off the ball linebacker in this class. We've talked about him a few times leading up to all this. A little bit taller linebacker, almost 6'4" there, so that's an abnormality kind of overall when it comes to the Steelers. They normally like those guys 5'11 to 6'1". I think generally that doesn't mean that, you know, they take out tape measure and say you're not the guy, you know. But generally a little bit taller. He's a little bit wafier, I think, overall, at least in his build. What I said about him several times in this thing is those knee injuries alone, if you did not know about him, this guy can still run. I mean, he can still run. He can sideline to sideline. He's got closing speed. He can chase people down from behind. You know what I meant to do first thing when I got up this morning? Mm-hmm. Was I meant to go back to the NFL Combine to look at his 40 run, only because of I wanted to see if it felt like he got faster after 20 yards. Because mm-hmm. There is several situations on tape with him, and one most notably with him chasing a guy down from behind, like 45 yards down the field, 50 yards down the field, where it looks like he kicks it in, where he kicks into another gear there. And I meant to, I didn't do that. But
well, I have some data here for you. They call it the flying 20, right? The last 20 yards. He ran 4.43, according to Draft Scout. His 20-yard dash was 2.58. So you do the quick math there, his last 20 yards would be 1.85.
Okay, so that matches up then, huh?
Yeah, now I imagine for most players, their final 20 yards are faster than the first 20. Right, I don't know how that compares.
Because you're coming out of a dead stop.
Yeah. But I mean, I'm going to assume that a 1.85 final 20 yards, pretty darn fast for a linebacker.
Yeah, you know what I'm trying to get to, though, where it got looks another like, gear to him. Right, where a guy looks like he shifts it into gear. This guy can close quick too. You see him sideline to sideline chasing down some quarterbacks or a wide receiver that gets around the edge or something along those lines there. But the guy can still run, and the big knock on him obviously is the injury concerns and the medicals. And I think, you know, people saying that he's going to be a one contract guy, and you know, I get it, especially with a guy his age and all like that. You know, I know it's probably a big if he can stay healthy, and that would be the thing with him. But if he does stay healthy, he's got a chance to put up some eye popping kind of stats, you know, because I think he finds the ball real well, especially if he were to get into a more of a starting role down the line. Obviously, I don't think that's going to happen during his rookie season, but this is the guy that can contribute down the line for sure if he does indeed stay healthy.
You can probably speak to the tape side a bit better than I can currently, so I'll just talk about the injury aspect because I've done a lot of writing on that the last day. Even before the pick came in, Ian Rappaport from NFL Network was talking about why Peyton Wilson was falling number 41 on Daniel Jeremiah's top 150, being there, you know, almost at the end of the third round, going off at number 98. So the issues with Wilson, according to Rappaport and based on what we know, is he's had two torn ACLs. One happened his senior year of high school, missed the season. The next happened his first year at NC State, missed the rest of the season. I assume it's the same knee, because Rappaport went on to say that Wilson does not have an ACL in one of his knees. I don't know which. I don't know all the details about that. And then there were shoulder issues as well. Right. He had two shoulder surgeries in the spring of 2021. Both shoulders, don't know the exact nature of what those were. And then later that fall in 21, two games into the season, had another shoulder injury and surgery that ended his season. And according to Rappaport, one of those surgeries of the three did not go well. Again, I don't know exactly what that means. And so the concerns there are all that history. And then Rappaport saying that Wilson does not have an ACL in one of his knees. Now, I don't know if that means he was born without an ACL in one of his knees, or if when he tore one, it's so shredded that it effectively doesn't exist. We're going to have to get Dr. Mel in here, I think, at some point. But obviously, there's a lot of scary medical stuff.
Speaking of which, Dr. Mel's going to earn her keep this this pre-draft process here, post-pick process here, because there are a couple of guys that got some, you know, got a little bit of injury history in him, I think, you know. Look, I'm not going to pretend to play doctor here. I'll do it on Twitter every once in a while there. But she should lay it all out. But the list with Peyton Wilson is long as far as the work that he's had done. That's for sure. But once again, and we talked about this during the pre-draft process, is – he stayed healthy these last couple of years, and boy, he can still move on the tape, and it's evident. And I think even Terrell Austin was talking to the media, saying that this guy, you know, the speed is still evident on tape there for sure. So he can. The thing, some of the negatives with him, I had to look this up because I thought it was wrong when going back and looking at this last night. Do you remember how long his arms are? Don't look.
I just looked again, but I knew they were short because when I did my What They Look For study, he missed in length, but you can tell the friends about his inability to feed himself.
No, I wasn't going to go that direction because I popped on the game against Virginia last night. By the way, those uniforms that North Carolina State wore against the white with the blood red. Do you remember those?
I can look. Are you loving them or hating them?
Oh, I loved them, man. They really, really popped. I mean, they really popped. But anyway, in that game, I turned on that game against Virginia last night. He will. No, what I'm getting at is I saw certain shots of him. His arms look longer than the 30. Was it 30, 30 and a half?
30 and a half. Yeah.
I mean, to me, his arms look longer than 30 and a half. Now, maybe that's the posture, or maybe that's because his overall length, you know, is there at almost 6'4" and all like that. But in re-remembering the arm length, which we've obviously had since the combine, there are only a few times where that I saw where I thought, you know, he's got to unstick himself, you know, from defenders. He is more than willing to take on guys at whatever level. And look, they used him to rush the quarterback a lot at NC State. He is a guy that played off the ball. They line him up over off the edge. He moved around a lot in that defense, especially 2023 tape. He got after the quarterback a lot as well, too. Basically, where I'm going here is I didn't get the sense in tape that, you know, he struggled to feed himself, you know, throughout this process.
Yeah, I wonder what the history is. Are there, you know, been really good linebackers with super short arms? I imagine
he's got shorter arms than Nick Herbig does.
Yeah, what does Herbig have? I'm not sure where he came in.
What, at 31 something?
I think so. That sounds about right. So we'll see what the history is on that. But yeah, it obviously did not prevent him from – none of the stuff he's been through has prevented him from being an awesome linebacker the last 2 years. The health issues, the length issues, he's been ultra productive. And yeah, for a guy with his knee problems, these big Ben knees apparently, to run 4.43 and move the way that he does sideline to sideline on tape is still really impressive. So to just go back quickly to the Rappaport point, what his conclusion was, there are 22 teams. I don't know if Pittsburgh is part of that group. I imagine they are, that share medical information with each other to kind of streamline the process, make things more efficient. And all 22, according to Rappaport, believe that Wilson is a one contract kind of a guy. You know, is that true? Who knows? Nobody knows for sure. But that's their standpoint. That's their concern with him medically. And that's why he fell to 98.
Yeah. If not for those, he would have gone a lot earlier. I think Daniel Jeremiah had him like even 41, 41st overall player on his 100 or 150 or whatever it was and all like that. If he can, once again, you know, it's going to go back to whether or not he can stay healthy. He's going to produce for you. Danny Smith's going to love him too, because this is a hair on fire, type of guy. I don't know how much of the interviews you saw with him throughout the Senior Bowl and the pre-draft and the combine and those kind of things there, but I mean, very salt of the earth kind of guy. I mean, you're not going to have any issues with this guy. This guy is all in. I think even he said in his conference call yesterday, "I play this game like my next snap could be my last because of all the injuries that he's had and those kind of things there." So you get a very, very strong character guy, a guy that you could even foresee, you know, calling the defense if you got in a situation and going to be a team leader, going to show up all the community functions and all those kind of things there. His brother used to pitch for the Pirates. He loves Pittsburgh, has been to the city before. We say this a lot. There's nothing not to like about this kid. You know, you just hope and pray that he can, you know, stay healthy overall. And if he does, the only other negative thing that I would say about him that I think immediately stuck out on tape with Peyton Wilson is he tends to want to, because he's longer, he tends to tackle higher, I think, at times. and he'll miss some tackles that way. Guys will shrug him off. I think he missed a sack or two us all on tape because he tends to want to go up high even. So you probably need to get him to kind of lower that aiming point a little bit, maybe break down a little bit better with that. He has a great sense of where the ball is always at on the field. So he can find, I think he finds the football quickly. I think he diagnoses well. And once again, I think the thing when people go through his tape is they'll see that he moved, you know, they didn't play him stacked every snap. He would be all over the place. You'll see him out even in a slot running down the field. With guys, I think as far as a zone defender goes, he definitely has a sense of where to be on the field in passing situations. Obviously, the way that he moves, he can hold his own, I think, in man coverage type situations there. So, yeah, I mean, you get a smart guy that's productive, that can do it all kind of guy. He's gonna contribute immediately on special teams. And here's the thing with him. I guess where I was a bit surprised. This is a linebacker unit that was really eaten up by injuries last year.
Yeah.
Overall. And we both agreed throughout this pre-draft process that all the places that Aaron Curry was, that we expected them to address the inside linebacker position there. And we talked about the injury history and really how long he is and how the Steelers normally don't go with guys that, you know, that long as far as height goes. I was a bit surprised he was the pick. But, you know, there becomes a intersection data point of where the value versus the pick is. And I think overall with every pick that this team has had in this draft, you would say, man, I can't believe they got this guy here. You know?
Yeah, it's like last year. A lot of good value.
And I think they reached that point where the risk versus where the pick number was, well, we got to take him here, you know? So that's why I think they went the direction that they did.
And he's a dynamic splash playmaker. And we know when Pittsburgh rebuilt their inside linebacker room ahead of 2023, they wanted guys who could make big plays. They didn't get that in 22, and they got that in 23 before those guys all got hurt. Holcomb making plays, Alexander making plays, Roberts made plays throughout the season. In the last 2 years, Wilson has, 30 tackles for a loss, 10 and a half sacks, 4 picks, a forced fumble. I mean, this guy's got 50 career tackles for loss almost, 15 sacks, 7 interceptions, a really high number for an inside linebacker. And so you bet on that, you bet on the health. And Pittsburgh, generally speaking, you mentioned this earlier, Dave, they have bet on, you know, they've kind of been roll the dice, so to speak, but betting on the medical guys. I mean, they took Darnell Washington last year, and he had the fall in the third round due to some long-term knee concerns. They take Corey Trice in the seventh round with all his issues at Purdue, and unfortunately, you know, tore his ACL as a rookie. They take Fautanu, that apparently had some long-term medical concerns too with those knees. Zach Frazier coming off the broken leg, although I think he's going to be in a good place and be good to go for probably even mini camp. And you take Peyton Wilson. So, you know, Pittsburgh is not worried about the risk of some of the medical that probably scares some other teams off.
That's a good point that you made with production. We'll call that the Devin Bush Index.
I like that. I like that.
What'd you rattle off there? 48 tackles for loss?
In his career, 15 sacks, 7 interceptions, 1 forced fumble, 1 defensive touchdown, a pick 6.
Devin Bush would never.
Yeah, he still isn't that 50 tackles for a loss, I think, his whole college NFL career.
Look, and once again, they did, you know, they asked him to rush quite a bit there. So I'm not expecting, what do you have, 6 sacks last year? Mm-hmm. So a couple of those, I think, were kind of scramble type situations too, where quarterback, you know, trying to get out of pocket and those kind of things there. But yeah, he can diagnose, he can get in the backfield, he can get in those creases, shoot gaps and all like that. It's all about the health with him. If he stays healthy and can get on the field and get serious playing time, A lot of people try to, you know, and he says he models his game after Luke Kuechly, and some people have done the Luke Kuechly comparison. I thought Luke Kuechly was a lot more kind of just a little bit different build overall than Peyton Wilson, at least in my mind. I don't know if I've ever thought in the process, man, it kind of reminds me of Luke Kuechly overall, but he can be productive if he stays on the field there. And once again, I think that, you know, Danny Smith's going to love him. He'll be on special teams. Heck, the way he runs, man, and his height, maybe he could be your gunner. That's you know, I'm stretching it there, but I mean, he can definitely get downfield and help you out on special teams. And you could even put him in on the field in some kind of nickel situation if you got desperate enough and all like that. So, a guy that's not hard to like.
And you better have some good coverage people on these kick coverages, these kick returns. And so that's a guy that I think is gonna do well there. His mentality, his speed, his tackling. And listen, remember they tried Matthew Thomas linebacker at gunner one time way back when. Mm-hmm. You know, probably won't do it, but they got some gunner competition available for the taking. You know, they lost Pierre, they lost Miles Boykin. So yeah, I know you're just kind of joking there, but certainly he'll carve out a role on special teams. I'm not gonna get much right here. Well, I'll also say on the Kuechly, yeah, he's probably not the next, you know, Luke Kuechly, but he's a North Carolina kid, grew up probably watching Luke Kuechly his whole career, you know, one of the top linebackers the last 15 years. So I can appreciate him at least shooting for that model of, you know, hoping to aspire to be a guy like that. But I won't get much right here in my mock, but I was pretty confident consistently the last couple of weeks they would take an off-ball linebacker at 98-119 spot. I put in a linebacker at 90. My final mock, it was Cedric Gray. I think if Wilson was off the board, they would have gone Cedric Gray from North Carolina. So again, they had a desire to add depth there, given all the injuries, although as you kind of alluded to, it's ironic they're, you know, they're protecting themselves from injury by adding a guy with a lot of injury history.
Right.
But to the counterpoint, people will say is he's been healthy the last 2 years. He's not been hurt.
Right. Exactly. So I can't wait to that will be a long post with him by Dr. Mel trying to cover all the stuff that he's had done.
There will be some billable hours, I think, when it comes to the Peyton Wilson injury history. But yeah, worth exploring, and Pittsburgh obviously felt comfortable enough. So those are the picks, Dave. Frazier, Wilson, and Wilson, the law firm, on day two.
Yeah, look, not a bad haul at all there for this team. You got a tackle, you got a center, you got a wide receiver, and you got a linebacker. And if you would have told anybody you're going to come out, I mean, of the first four picks with those positions, you know, It was probably to be expected there, especially with the linebacker, the way Curry made the rounds that he went there overall. And look, you know, after the team signed Patrick Queen, you kind of wondered if they really might go down the road or not, because they addressed it with such a big name and a big contract there. But I think once you got into the pre-draft process and saw them sniffing around with their position coach and all, it was. You kind of wondered if that'd be a mid-round pick there. So, all right.
Yeah, you don't send Aaron Curry to a bunch of pro days to not draft the position. And they brought in Kalike Hudson, you know, for a visit in free agency, and he didn't sign. So all the signs were there. To me, it wasn't necessarily their biggest need, but I understand they wanted protection there. And Holcomb, with his uncertainty about, you know, playing this year, and Landon Roberts, a free agent after this year, there is certainly incentive to add to that group.
He's a very good to hear him talk to. He's good. He's probably going to be a good interview, Peyton Wilson.
Yeah, I think so overall. Yeah, the character seems pretty good. He was arrested when he was 19 or 20 for an underage thing. I think it's one of the just stupid things you do as a kid in college, and you grow up and you learn from each 24 years old right now. So Pittsburgh almost never takes guys that are seriously, you know, red flag character wise. And so I trust that he's you know, he's matured and grown up a lot.
And I think, doesn't he have a wrestling background as well?
Yeah, I think so. I don't know if it's as prolific as Zach Frazier.
But
Pittsburgh, they draft wrestlers. Keanu Benton wrestled too. So they certainly had like that in somebody's background. So watch out for that.
He said last night, wrestling instills a lot into you when it comes to football itself, hand fighting. I think that helps with that. Probably helps with it not feeling like those short arms really show up that much on. Maybe that has something to do with it there.
Sure.
He says, I think if I can get my hands on you, you're coming to the ground. I understand leverage and torque He actually had said this during the pre-draft process at one point. But wrestling is different. In football, if you mess up, you have 10 other guys to help you out. But wrestling, you mess up, you're going on top. You're going on top of your head, and you're getting embarrassed in front of your mom, your dad, your friends. The mentality and anger and aggression it instills in you. So maybe that's yet another reason why, even though with listed as the short arms, which once again I had to go back last night because it felt like his arms were longer than that. You got another guy with wrestling background in him. Overall.
All right, Dave, day three is already almost 90 minutes away at this point. Kind of put a bow here. What are you looking for them to potentially draft? I know day three board opens up. You're just trying to find talent. Depth is not great in this year's class, but what areas do you think positionally they could target on day three?
Yeah, it doesn't change what we've already rattled off here. I think you look for a cornerback of some shape and form, maybe someone that can give you some nickel capabilities that you can work with there. So that would be one position. Another wide receiver, if they went down that road, wouldn't surprise me overall. A developmental defensive line that you know, you think maybe you could work with and develop, I think could be in the cards here for this team as well. So, I don't think I'd be totally shocked if they drafted a safety of some way, shape, or form. I know you only have three picks on the board here and trying to put 10 pounds in an 8-pound bag or 5-pound bag here. But those four positions, I mean, how many defensive players have they drafted right now?
One. And Wilson. Yep.
There will be at least another two defensive players probably taken with these final three picks.
I agree. I think you'll see D-line, some of the day three names that came in for visits, Logan Lee from Iowa, Jaden Crumedy from Mississippi State, Christian Boyd from Northern Iowa. I think Boyd's a little less likely based on his testing and just overall scheme fit. I think Lee and Crumedy could certainly be one of those selections. Pittsburgh, by the way, for those that don't know, picking 119 in the fourth round and then a pair of six round picks at 178 and 195. I think I have that right. I kind of get those numbers mixed up sometimes. So I think D-line, I think we'll see something in the secondary, which is, I know, very broad to say, probably more likely corner than safety, but just kind of depends. And then the other pick, not quite sure, might be based on just talent on the board.
Probably will be a Senior Bowl or Shrine Bowl guy, right?
Likely. There probably aren't many underclassmen even left at this point. And if they are, they probably, shouldn't have declared. Could you see a quarterback? You think that's on the table? Carter Bradley, George Travis?
Man, I would hope not. I mean, we've talked about it, and those are kind of the names that we've attached to it if they went that direction. But you've got a acceptable quarterback depth chart that you can work with right now. Just get one of these guys undrafted to come in and sign an undrafted guy, invite one to the rookie mini camp, something along those lines, and call it a day.
Sure. I'm with you overall, but we shall see. I'll just mention quickly some names I wrote up this morning for the site just to throw some people out there. I know if they go three offensive linemen, that's really heavy, but if the talent's there, I like Stephen Jones, the guard from Oregon. He's played some tackle. I think he probably impressed at his pro day when Pat Meyer was out there. That's why he came in for a visit. How about the UK kid, Travis Clayton, came in for a visit too. Could that be their Jordan Mayata in the sixth round of pick 195 or so? I think some people think he will get drafted today. Dude's, 6'7", 301, 35-inch arms, never played, professional, well, obviously, but never really played football before, but it's been training to play offensive tackle. That'd be interesting. You mentioned Travis Glover in your mock draft, a kid they had a ton of interest from Georgia State. He had receiver. Javon Baker, Cornelius Johnson, Jordan Whittington from Texas, a big slot type, D-line. How about Gabe Hall in the fourth round? Took Gabe Hall in the fourth round. Would that make you mad?
I would like to see. What's the corner situation look like that you have suggestions?
Kyrie Jackson from Oregon, who's kind of got that Porter type of build. He's almost 6'4", 200 pounds, 32¾-inch arms with some production last year.
Is Gabe Hall going to fall out of the thing is, if Gabe Hall fell out of the fourth, would he make it through the fifth?
Yeah, at some point, someone's going to take the chance. I mean, Mason Smith went what do you go, 50-something? And that's a Gabe Hall's similar to that, where it's kind of a lot of developmental traits you're trying to bet on. So I doubt he would be there in the sixth round, but you never know.
I mean, look, Gabe is just very, very hot and cold, you know, kind of guy there. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me. He's one of the guys we talked about kind of right out of shoot around Senior Bowl time there. So, it wouldn't hurt my feelings. You know, I think we've identified the positions we think they should go there. Logan Lee, I think you and Josh have him in the mocks, I think. They're a guy that we talked about. Man, if you could get some sand in the bottom end of him a little bit and get him some more experience, maybe a guy to work with there. That Zion Logue out of Georgia is a measurable guy that could potentially be, you know, the final sixth round pick or whatnot. Or if you did some willing and dealing, ended up with a seventh round pick, Logue would probably still be on the board late there as well too. What other names did you have on the list?
At corner or just anywhere?
Just in general.
Yeah, I mean, I mentioned most of the non-corners, some other corners. Jarvis Brownlee Jr., I think it'd be interesting. The athleticism, isn't great, but I think potential slot, you know, physical type of guy. Daquan Hardy from Penn State, nickel type, came in for a visit. Local guy. Sean Stevens, probably more undrafted free agent, but maybe sixth round. I'm not going to totally discount that. He tested well at the pro day he went to Michigan State. And then, you know, maybe a safety. I put Mark Perry in my mock draft. Maybe Josh Proctor from Ohio State has got some versatility, but you know, we're just kind of guessing at this point.
Has MJ Devonshire come off the board yet?
No, I should have mentioned him. Yeah, because I forgot to put him on my list. I could really see Devonshire be the guy. He's got a bit more size and obviously local and with some ball production. So, I mean, that could be the pick, I think, at 119 potentially.
And what was Hardy's measurements?
He's small. He's like 5093, 173, 178. I mean, he's a Sandra Still type of guy.
That might end up being a pick.
Hardy?
Yeah.
In the fourth or the sixth?
Six, probably.
Yeah, I think six on Hardy. I could see Devonshire. I think maybe one of those two guys, Hardy or Devonshire, becomes a Steeler today.
Yeah, that'd be a good. That'd be an interesting. I wonder what kind of odds you can get team specific on them drafting.
Take one party as odds out there.
For that though, but that's a good list you put together.
And then undrafted free agents. I was like 4 a.m. looking at undrafted guys last night. Shame on me for doing that. A quarterback, Rocky Lombardi, Northern Illinois, was at Michigan State to begin his career. Marcus Rosemy, Jack Saint from Georgia. I think some people think he will get drafted, but he ran like 4.8 at his pro day. He ain't getting drafted running 4.8.
Physical guy, though. That will play special teams and block for you, though. I'll tell you that.
Can definitely see the undrafted vibes there. Doug Nestor, the other West Virginia offensive lineman, will put him the center from Clemson. Small, but a bunch of experience. Kyler Baugh, the D lineman of Minnesota. I know Jim Ward talked to him at that Golden Gophers pro day. Some slot corners to look at. The Corey Couch from the U, I think, makes sense. Ryan Cooper, Oregon State. Beanie Bishop also came in for a visit. That could be a potential six-round pick or undrafted guy. And I'd love them to bring in Andre Sam, the safety from LSU. He was older, but really good tape.
All right.
All right, Dave, we are wrapping things up here. Any final thoughts here? I know we got to get this thing posted so we can have this for people to listen to before the draft actually kicks back off.
Absolutely. I'll try to get this turned around as quick as possible. We won't take any questions. We'll have plenty of questions after the draft and the live stream, I think, on Monday and all like that. So I need more coffee. That's what I need. I don't get a lot of sleep. I stutter even more than I normally stutter. My stutters have stutters. But
no, you're good.
Let's see. In the meantime, you can follow me on Twitter/X at Steelers Depot. You can follow Alex at Alex_Kozora. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what we do and want to donate to the cause, SteelersDepot.com, hit the donate button. Also, if you like an ad-free version of the site, SteelersDepot.com, hit the ad-free button. Upper right navigation bar, thank you for visiting SteelersDepot.com. We had an all-time record traffic day on Friday there, and you know, obviously we couldn't do it without you. We couldn't do it without our hardworking crew as well, too. They are burning both ends of the candle. Alex, you're doing a great job, you know, helping manage that. They're just pumping out the kind. I think we had like 90 posts or something up on the site yesterday there. So thank you everybody for visiting the site and listening to this show. It means a lot to us. We just enjoy putting these out, enjoy talking about the prospects and the picks and all like that. And we'll be back tomorrow talking about the entire draft and undrafted free agents and all like that. So in the meantime, as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Alex.